Hi, I'm Josh, and any book I read is a night book.
Oh, you're silly.
Hi, I'm Matt, and the podcast is coming from inside the house.
Hugh Laurie is deeply uncomfortable.
Yes.
this is Charlie. This is Charlie down in Austin. So, my daughter really likes Sesame Street, and that's really great because I love Sesame Street and basically everything related to Jim Henson. So it makes me happy that she really digs it. But Kristen's mother, God love her, will always send many things when she hears that you like a thing. So we've gotten many, many plush toys of all the different Sesame Street characters, and it's fantastic. However, every now and again, if I come down in the middle of the night and in her little playpen, she's got 53 of these things in there. Sometimes, every once in a while, they're just all turned one, like, more than average are all turned one direction. And it's like, I don't care for that, like, at all. And so that it feels like it's a Muppet's Haunted Living Room. Not a mansion, because it's the same house, but, you know, such as it is. But yeah, that's all I got.
You get one of those big heavy lids like people put on their hot tubs?
Yeah, it's just like Funk all y'all in the iron box. Yeah. Cannot trust you.
We must kennel your Muppets.
Exactly.
And
have you crate trained your Grover?
We are clearly going gonzo tonight, and it's Harsha Hot Dog. First up tonight, we have a short called Eye Exam, or El Examen de Ojos. This is a short by the dude who, or the person, the human of a gender, who directed, what was it?
The Devil's Doorway.
Ah, The Devil's Doorway, yes.
Yes.
So, from the person who gave us our favorite new euphemism for anal sex, we got...
I'm sure that was our goal.
Yeah. This is fun because this is a little subgenre that we don't get enough of, where it's just like 3 minutes of weird.
Yeah.
And you don't have to really know what's happening. We just know a lady goes in for an eye exam. Every time she tries to pick which thing is more in focus, she gets like weird eldritch moaning from around the room and sees freaky dudes with one eye. And it's all just vaguely threatening and evocative without really making any sense. And like, yep. That's fine. It perfectly captures the way I used to feel at the optometrist.
Yeah.
Until I had one good optometrist who said, don't worry about picking the right one when I say this one or this one. This is not the only way we get your prescription. I was like, thank fucking God. Yeah. Like, how come I was 40 before somebody said that to me?
Yeah, come and had that too with his eye doctor. It's funny you say that, Josh, because he had the exact same thing. He's like, he got super flustered, and the lady optometrist is a really nice lady. She's really cool, but he was like, but I don't want to. Like, I'm concerned if I get the wrong one. If I do the wrong one, you'll get the. She's like, it's okay. We're gonna do like six more tests, and we kind of look at them together, and then I make a determination. Because, and she said it in the sweetest way possible, but she's like, because I'm the doctor. And he said, okay. Like, but he had the same thing where he got super flustered. He's like, what if I picked the wrong thing? God damn it.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time when I was working in optics, just when we were slow, I would just sit and chat up the doctor. And we'd talk about all kinds of shit, but I'd ask all kinds of questions about, like, you know, eye exams and eye stuff. And he's like, honestly, at the point where we're at, the auto refractor that you do, you know, before you go in and see the doctor. Because that technology is so advanced, it can damn you could just get a prescription right off the app. You almost don't even have to see anybody anymore. But, you know, we're also checking for, like, health stuff, and we fine-tune it a little bit. He goes, but most of the time, a person could just take the reading and get off that machine and get glasses, and they'd be fine. But the margin of error on most prescriptions is actually pretty wide from when I was grinding lenses. Like, you can be off by, like, a half diopter, which would be the equivalent of being off by, like, a half inch if you're, like, cutting a board to fit something. And it would still be good enough, mm-hmm. And people would not even notice the difference. You know?
I do like him leaning. I do like the idea of him leaning in very closely and be like, "And if you repeat that,
yeah, exactly, we will find you."
Exactly.
We'll use the ice scoop next time.
I love the idea of like a Mad Max kind of like that shot where they're all coming across the plains, you know, on the sticks and all this stuff, but they're all optometrists,
right? They're all just carrying melon ballers.
Yeah, there you go. That's terrific.
has anyone, somebody surely at some point has done a political cartoon that has like optometrists on strike and like you can't read the bottom line of their sign because the text is too small.
That's pretty funny.
That had to be the New Yorker at some point.
It's not, yeah, it sounds very New Yorker for sure.
With the caption, Christ, what an asshole. So yeah, I'd say watch Eye Exam. That was fun.
Yeah, and I want to see. I also want to see whether stuff. But we talked about that during Devil's Doorway. But like, Aislinn Clarke definitely seems to have a firm hand and like a good sense of style and placement, and like she's got a really good sense of things. And so I really want to see whether stuff they can get moving. Like, there's something to be said for like just somebody that's got a sure foot about what they're doing, and she definitely seems like she's got that. So yeah, I want to see other. Want to see as much stuff as possible. Like just take a year and have all the women direct. Like I just saw Rebecca McKendry she's just got this thing that she directed with some folks in it. I think J.K. Simmons is in it, a couple other people, and they just announced that. And then Roxanne Benjamin's got another thing going. So like, just have a year and have all the women do them. Like, let's just get a different perspective on some stuff.
I dig
it. Yeah, I like this one too. I like anything that's kind of eldritchy. I don't remember if I said this already. This, because like you said, Josh, like this doesn't really bother to go out of its way to explain itself. It's just like eerie shit exists just outside of your perception. Mm. It gave me shades of The Beyond. You know, where you'd like, you find a way to be able to like see what's always there. And it turns out that once you can see them, they realize that they can be seen and then they don't like you no more.
So. Well, the doctor's reaction where you're just going, it's just shaking. Yeah, that's cool. I liked it.
Yeah, it's good. I'd say watch it for sure.
Nice. Let's get to sorry, I was just backward masking for a minute there. Let's talk about.
Call that Cotton Eye Joe-itis.
That's where the first time I heard that, I thought he was saying spit out the rooster Cotton Eye Joe, which doesn't sound anything like what he's actually saying. But, you know, maybe I had some extra earwax that day. But let's talk about night books. Libros de la noche. Working on it. Yeah, wow. Wouldn't have pegged you for a Bob Seger fan.
No. I think it was just on the house music today.
Okay, well, let's turn the page. Like a Rock. There's...
all these references I don't get.
They're all Bob Seger song titles.
Gotcha.
So Night Books it falls into that very narrow category of like young adult horror lit turned movie. So like... in the vein of like Goosebumps, maybe hitting a little harder, House with the Clock in Its Walls.
Yeah.
Had a similar vibe to it. And I always feel like there's not enough of these like fun action horror that I can watch with my kid.
It's got a really good 80s vibe, like a Goonies or something like that, where there's like some genuinely spooky moments, but you'd still feel pretty comfortable, or your kid will be like, but then there's enough fun that they won't like lose sleep over it usually.
Yeah.
Well, then this one also has an interesting style choice where, like, we observed this because we observed the movie, but like we observed it like where it just the movie it just kind of goes, it just starts like you just sort of there's not like a big long lead in and kind of whatever, it just sort of like you're just kind of in it, like it's sort of
It starts like an episode of the new Creep Show where it's like we ain't got time for that.
Yeah, we got time for it. We gotta go, and it's like it's a little jarring initially. Like whoa, geez, like we're like in it already. Like, okay, well, fair enough. And then you kind of settle in. But I thought that was an interesting choice because you're expecting certain beats that just don't exist.
Yeah, but I think that speaks to like the strength of how this is put together. That like, while you do just kind of get dropped in a little bit in media res, like it's not, you know, it's disorienting just because you expect something different. But it's not that you don't get what's happening. Like it still makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
What it really does to me, at least, is like it sets the hook real early, and then it's an enjoyable thing to figure out like the little bits of mystery and whatnot. as opposed to just being like, I have no idea what's fucking going on. You have to wait till the third act to have it like, oh, okay, now I get it. Like, it's exciting to kind of unravel it and see if you can figure it out a little, like a step ahead of the movie.
So, well, and then also this has a wonderful look. The production design is just ridiculously good. It's just like, it's got a hell of a look to it. And it's got so much texture and layer, and it's just like, that's super rad. But then also too, I would be remiss if I didn't remember to say this out loud, which was that, usually we get used to male actors getting these like big chewy roles to like just look like they're having a fucking blast doing, and like they're just reveling in it. And it's really cool to see a female actor just get a role where they can just kind of sit in it. Like, it seemed like Kristen Ritter was having just entirely too much fun with this.
For sure.
And it was very enjoyable. I had a lot of fun watching her like just sort of embrace this kind of wonderfully ridiculous sort of role, and it's just really made it cool.
Yeah, Kristen Ritter is kind of a national treasure.
For sure.
We just kept going, I can't believe that's Jessica Jones, man. That's super weird. Yeah. But yeah, it is interesting that this starts with the aftermath of the kid getting humiliated, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't see that incident, and they kind of withhold it until it's time for him to tell that story, which is kind of cool. It's also cool that we have this kind of, you know, Scheherazade kind of thing where he has to tell stories to live, or the witch will do something horrible to him. And the stories are all portrayed in this really fun, like, lo-fi dream sequence-y kind of thing that I thought that was really neat.
Yeah, that was super fun.
Oh, and so we have this idea where he gets lured into the apartment that the witch lives in. She has like a giant garden full of evil plants that make potions. We have another kid that's there as a victim, and we have a giant library where kid is going to try and write his stories. And as he tells the stories, when he gets things not the way the witch wants them, everything shakes. And so we have this kind of tense little setup where he's trying to escape, can't seem to. Girl seems to kind of know what's going on, but she's basically given up on ever getting out. We have a lovely false escape, which is great.
Yeah, that was a vicious little bit of business.
Reminded me of the, again, I will say, that one movie that we watched where there's the room that grants wishes. And they,
oh yeah,
they, she wishes a kid into existence, and then
yeah, that
they
was
end up the wishing that there was a whole other house inside the room, and like they find out that they're still inside the room when they go in there. And,
yeah, I can't remember the title, but that was a fun one.
Half of that was fun. Like, that was the good half of that movie, was when that finally happened.
Yeah.
But then this one has just that. It's got that kinetic energy. It's got the silliness of Kristen Ritter, but then she has a little bit of underlying menace.
And oh, yeah.
She's like evil Lady Gaga. Like, wow. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's like that. I forget. There's like someone used this comparison about some movie or something like that, where she's like, if you're walking down the street, like walking home at night, and a completely unfamiliar dog trots up and stops about 5 feet in front of you. And it doesn't have to be growling or anything, but you just kind of go, what do I do? Like, you know, if it's just sitting there just staring at you and is directly in between you and where you're trying to go, it's like, can I wander past this dog and it will ignore me? If I move closer to it, will it freak out and bite me? And you're uneasy and you just don't want to turn your back on it. And she kind of has that same thing where like, there's like always the potential of like, you're too unpredictable that I don't know whether or not I can safely navigate around you, even if I'm just trying to leave you alone.
Well, the Cabinet of Kids kind of underscores that, where you're like,
for sure.
Like, oh, there's some real life consequences right the fuck there. Yeah. It's like,
Speaking of the thing where she's like, kind of like fact checking his stories as they go along, it reminded me of Kathy Bates in Misery. When, you know, she makes James Caan like do a, yeah, he didn't get out of the cock-a-doodle car was the first thing I thought of. And I was like, oh my God, she's doing that. she's doing like a Reddit well actually and tipping her fedora because, you know, everybody knows that pixies can't whatever or something. And he's like, right, yes, of course. Like, how the fuck would I know this? So good.
Oh, the kid actors in this are good too. And that's really the make or break. Like, neither of them stuck out as being over the top, and they had some genuine emotion, like some good chemistry between them. And I liked that he didn't have a crush on her, really. That it was just a platonic thing.
Yep, just good buds.
That was another thing,
like taking that the hell off of the table. Like, feels like a lot of the 80s adventure-y type ones, like, they always had that always had to be a component. And it's sort of like, I really enjoy that a lot of these ones anymore, like, they just like, we don't have anything to bother with that, because this is, it's kind of pointless. Like, it's not as interesting as the other part of the story, so let's just not bother with it. And I think it's kind of cool that they, more often than not, that's being embraced as like a way to tell a story in such a way that is totally feasible and just holds just as much weight. It's, you know, that they care about each other as friends, and he wants her to be safe and this, that, and all that. Like, that's perfectly valid too. Like, that's really quite terrific, actually. That's, like, I really like that just in general.
Hollywood has always sort of depended on formulas, and like, that was definitely like the 70s, 80s, even early 90s formula. And, you know, it's a stupid one, and I'm glad that like the formula has changed. Like, and there's still room for that story too, whether you have them get together at the end or whatever, but like, it's just nice to see people to go, it doesn't always have to be, you know, like when you watch 30 Rock and, like, you know, Liz and Jack never end up together, which would be like the, if they'd made that show 10 years ago and was written by someone less clever, you know, that's what it would have been. It would have been a Ross and Rachel thing. And they're just like, nope, these are just people that work together. It doesn't mean they have to start hooking up by the end. Like, that's not how life works.
I do kind of wonder what my childhood and young adulthood would have been like if I had had entertainment where just boys and girls were friends.
Yeah, I bet that would have helped me out a lot.
Because there was this idea that anytime you were friends with a girl, it was just until you acted on your crush, you know, and she admitted that she had a crush on you, and, or, you know, you beat the bad guy and she was awarded to you as a prize. That happened a shit ton in 80s movies.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even just watching, I mean, not too long ago, in the last few months, I rewatched Casper, the one with Bill Pullman and Christina Ricci. Right. And that one, it's sort of like, it feels a little child bride-ish. Like, it's sort of, it's a little, the vibe of it's a little strange. It's like,
he's a 100-year-old Victorian ghost, and she's a modern girl on the go.
Different kind of a thing. And then Hocus Pocus.
The fuck is that?
This is the ongoing nonsense bullshit animal garbage that is going on in my household at all times. Motherfucker. But even what's it like, Hocus Pocus has an element of that as well. It's just sort of like get the fuck out of here with this.
Yeah, it's not enough to like save the day and beat the witches. He's also gotta get the girl, you know?
Yeah.
Her show for a long time. It was like, I had female friends, but I had like a crush on all of them, you know. I've only slowly grown as a human over the course of my life, as we all do. Mm-hmm. Not to say that has anything to do with this movie, except kudos for not having that shit in there. Then in the last act, we get a really neat, like, Del Toro light dive into like storytelling and the witch in the coffin that's been trapped there, and she's the candy in the gingerbread house is growing through her body, and it's really gnarly looking, but also really thematically cool, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So overall, like, I really enjoyed this, and I really enjoyed watching it with Oliver. I'm not sure that I would recommend it for adults to watch solo. And that's not necessarily a knock on it. You know, it's similar to The Kid Who Would Be King, that dude who did Attack the Block directed, where it was like, this is really neat to watch with a kid. I don't think it's quite an adult solo movie, but I liked it pretty well. So I would say like, it was 7.5 out of 10 with a thumbs up and a smile. Oh, and fantastic costuming. Unbelievable.
For sure. I mean, I watched this Solo, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, I think, you know, your mileage may vary because not everybody likes things that are kind of geared towards, you know, a younger crowd. You know, they want something that's a little more mature, and that's fine. But if something's like well written and well acted enough, even if it's kind of geared towards a younger crowd, like I can appreciate it if it's good. Mm-hmm. Like I've been watching the on Disney Plus, there's, you know, a bajillion things from Marvel, and I finally sat down and watched all the Marvel Rising stuff, which is sort of their, they don't call them Young Avengers, I think they call them Secret Warriors or something like that, but it's like Squirrel Girl and Kamala Khan and like all these, like Spider-Gwen and all these younger heroes doing a thing, and it's like definitely like a YA cartoon, but it's really funny and really clever and has really cool cameos by different characters from the Marvel Universe. And I'm like, goddamn, like, so yeah, this is a kid's show, but it's just done well. And so it's like, yeah, I'm the type of person that if they're good, I'll sit and watch, you know, cartoons. Like I liked the new He-Man and She-Ra and stuff like that too. But
yeah, I mean, I'm the last guy to not watch.
Oh, any for sure. Kind of kids, there are people that just like can't go for that, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's fine. That's, and so saying, like, it may be one of those things. So like, if that's not something that normally can hook you just on your own, then yeah, like if you got a kid to watch it with, I bet it's really fun to watch them react to something like this. But I thought it's solid enough, even though it's, you know, geared towards a younger crowd, that like it's totally kept my attention. I was really happy with this one. So I'll go just a little bit higher. I'll say 8 out of 10. Legitimately freaky little spider creatures.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. Good design on those. Like somebody watched like Arachnophobia and The Thing and then ate a pepperoni pizza and then went to bed, and that's what they dreamed.
Yeah, just their gastrointestinal fever dream.
Well, the thing that I loved about that spider thing was that, like, it's got that little skull-y face. Not Josh Scully face, but, like, a skull-ish face. And but what's great about it is if they had done everything in a very, you know, CGI kind of way, fine. You know, that's okay. You know, whatever. But for whatever reason, they did something to the texture of it, where like I was convinced that it was a little like the up close is like a real thing with matter, because it was like it had like a chalk kind of texture to it almost. It was like, this is really unnerving, and it's like, you know, when it moves around, it dances around, so it's got a little CGI little sucker growing around. That's fine, but like up close, a couple of shots up close, it's like, God, that's no. Because things, I think of those pictures, you see those little collections on the internet of like, here's 15 scary fucking bugs. And you're like, why would I do that to myself? Like, well, I should probably check it out. And then you're like, halfway through, you're like, God damn it. And it's just like these, like, you know, those what do they call the Goliath? Not the Goliath, not the, the Huntsman spider. Those, yeah, those things that are the size of a Buick.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like, you see like a person for scale, and you're like, that fucking thing could like eat a kid. And it's like, why am I looking at this goddamn thing? And it's like, but it's like those, it's the contrast of color on its back. And it's like, that's what made me think of with that way that the skull was designed. Like, I think if it was done way too over the top, then it would have looked kind of cartoony, but had enough of a texture where it's like, had a little bit of organic texture to it. I was like, ah, yeah, good job. yeah, I thought this was really cool. I had so much fun watching Kristen Ritter just like revel in this character. I mean, she's just having a ball. And I like how that kind of tips you a little bit that like, maybe she was a captive. Kristen. She was like, I wonder if she was one. Like, she was one of the ones that got. And I was like, well, I wonder. And then it was like, she was. I'm like, ah, shit. And so it was like, it was kind of neat to kind of see how that was done through and kind of how that sort of played. And I don't know. It was just sort of, it had made a lot of interesting, really cool little choices where, you know, like putting kids in peril and but then also like seeing that, like, well, you could just totally just get, you know, whacked by this witch. Like, good job. So that was neat. I thought it was cool. So I'll go, let me think here. I'll say 7, 3.5, 3.25. Yeah, I'll say 7.5. I think 7.5 makes sense. So 7.5. I mean, I don't want to be that guy, but like that library was super not accessible. So like,
yeah, it looks great, but boy, I'd be annoyed if I had to go get something off that top
That's shelf. What I'm saying, right? Like, I mean, when she wants to, like, capture children, but, like, wants to also make people that, like, differently abled people, people in a wheelchair, feel bad because you cannot get up.
Which doesn't skip leg day.
It's like...
Wasn't there a kid in a wheelchair in her menagerie?
I don't know. I can't remember now. Maybe.
Yeah, there might have been.
Yeah, so he...
He's just shot.
He only lasted until she asked him to get something from Section B, and I was like, well,
damn.
And they're like, nope, don't trust the B in apartment 23.
You sure you wouldn't prefer something from the periodicals on the first floor?
There's those sticks with the newspapers. Yeah, those little hanging sticks with the newspapers, yes.
No one's filled out the crossword yet in the Times.
Good luck. Well, if we can, gents, let's take a little break, and then we'll be right back to talk about our other two flicks. And then next up, we have The Muppets Haunted Mansion, or El Mansión de Fantasmas de los Muppets.
Yeah.
De los Muppets. One of my favorite memories from my time in LA, besides the time that Charlie came to visit, was going to get my hair cut at the Spanish hair salon back when I had hair. And I mean, for one thing, I told them the wrong verb. And I wanted to say, leave as much hair as you can. And I said, take as much hair as you can. So the haircut didn't turn out great. But this woman picked up a phone, rattled off like 20 sentences in light speed Spanish, and then went, Happy Halloween, and slammed the phone down. Like, my God, I wish I knew. No. What it was all about.
Cool.
Yeah. So Muppet Haunted Mansion is one of those new things, came to Disney Plus. Our friend and previous host, Adam J. Dunn, actually did some of the effects work on that thing. So that's how I even became aware of it. Gonzo and Pepe, who are kind of the central characters now because they're the ones with the least weird sounding voices, are...
Yeah.
So they're the stars of the show. They are going to go to the Haunted Mansion and see all of the ghosts and maybe turn into freaky older versions of themselves for a little bit and other exciting things. So this is an interesting mix because you have these really great like musical set pieces and classic Muppet stuff. And then there is a little bit of surprisingly dark shit lurking around the corners of this. Like, we have that extended sequence with the lady who basically wants to kill Gonzo, right? Or kill Pepe. Mm-hmm. And then Gonzo has his turning into the freaky old dark crystal looking motherfucker. So, yeah, I don't know. This was an interesting cat. It was too much for my daughter.
Really?
She could not hang, yeah. There's a scene where Gonzo is getting wheeled down a bunch of hallways, and that was the creepy thing for her. She was like, I can't with all these hallways. Like, okay, well. And we tried, like, yo, honey, come on. And she's like, nope, absolutely not.
Yeah, fair enough.
So she noped out of it. The rest of us enjoyed it intensely.
Yeah, I think it does a really good job of, while being... Because there's definitely like a difference between classic Muppet stuff and more modern Muppet stuff. Mm-hmm. But this one still, I feel like, had like the right amount of like silliness and warmth that I kind of like hold dear from the older stuff. And then, of course, with it being a tie-in to the Haunted Mansion from Disney, the nods and references and all that stuff that are just littered throughout this thing just made me super happy. Because every time you'd see like, oh, God, that's that part from the, that moment on the ride, or that part where you're walking down the hallway, or that's the same door knocker, and like all that stuff. And so kind of playing like Where's Waldo with all the references was super, super fun for me too.
Yeah. Stuff well, like having Miss Piggy as Madame Rosmerta.
So good. And like, the broken busts, there's like the four of them that are like a barbershop quartet thing. Mm-hmm. And then the one's like knocked over, except it's not like the old dudes, it's whatever. And I was like, oh God, that's just so, so much fun. Like, I absolutely love it.
Well, and then also, too, like, I mean, not to open up a can of worms necessarily, but like, Brian Henson shows up in this, but he's not on the creative team, nor is Frank Oz. And so that is why I think it has some charm. The two of them can suck the charm right out of the thing. And sort of like, and so it's sort of like to have them not be on the creative side of things was probably the right move, because it's just like, for God's sakes. So that was really kind of nice. And it had a nice kind of rhythm to it. Like, it wasn't too long. I don't think it was even an hour.
I think it's like 45 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and so it's like, it just kind of skips along The music bit's great. You know, and yeah, Matt, to your point, like, it brings in so much of the Haunted Mansion and just those little touch points that you recognize. And that made it very kind of just kind of neat. It's very charming. It was also fun to watch. It's always fun to watch the humans, like, have fun in the world. Like, yeah, it goes back to, you know, Charles Grodin back in, you know, Manhattan, and that's sort of like, they always go to Ray Liotta, you know, with like bye bye, you know, all that. Like, it's just, and then it was Daughter of Face and I watched, was it Elmo and Garchland not too long ago, and
oh yeah,
that Mandy one Patinkin. Is like Mandy Patinkin is fucking amazing.
Yeah, I remember just enjoying amazing. That as much as I was not an Elmo fan. It was too late.
Same, yeah. Elmo.
But it's like, you know, that one is like Mandy Patinkin and Vanessa Williams are just having a ball. And it's like, it's something really great about that. I mean, shit, you know, David Bowie in Labyrinth, for crying out loud. So, like, mm-hmm. It's fun to watch the humans when they get it.
Well, and then in this, like, Will Arnett looks like he's just barely holding in his merch.
Oh, I know. Oh, I know.
Yeah. You know, he's doing a great job and he's perfect for this role. But, like, you can tell he's just like, I can't believe I get to do this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, and then watching Taraji P. Henson, like, interact with Pepe, too. Like, it's one of those things I've noticed because I've watched so much Sesame Street in the last little bit of time, you know, recently over here. But, like, just in general, it's when you have somebody that addresses the Muppet like it's a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, versus that kind of, like, too cool for school, kind of like, oh, yeah, whatever, kind of. That kind of thing where you people that interact with them as if they are actually there because they are there. That's the way it's supposed to be done. And there's something that happens with that. And it seems like it's really hard to fake it.
Yeah, the Muppets don't work with ironic detachment.
Yeah, it just doesn't. It doesn't, like, they can be wiseacre and they can make silly jokes and whatever. Like, there was this thing about, there was this joke recently where, so a doctor, something about a doctor. It was a dentist. And then something about, like, it's like, it's a duck. And, like, oh, he's not a doctor. And then Grover just turns to the camera and says, he's a quack. I'm like, ah. Yeah. Like, they'll do that kind of humor. They'll always do that kind of humor. I mean, it's just always. But it's like, you can't, that ironic detachment doesn't work. And, like, watching Sesame Street, there's so many guests that get it. They understand. You know, like, watch that See Us Coming Together thing that they did when they introduced an Asian character. And, like, each one of the people, the guests that they have on there, from Padma Lakshmi to Jim Lee, like, they all get the idea that you're talking to a thing that's there. And it's like, when you get that, there's something that carries through and makes it even better. So this kind of, like, you know, kind of fun, spooky sort of stuff works even better when the humans seem to get the idea of how you're supposed to do this. Mm-hmm. Muppets Most Wanted, the one with Joan Cusack? That's the one I'm thinking of.
Muppets Most Wanted was Tina Fey.
Oh, I'm thinking, because the one with Joan Cusack where she like takes over the theater and then, like, you know, changes the contract and Pepe switches sides, and that one, it's like she, like, I love her approach to it, because, like, you know, not only have I accepted that you are an actual thing and this thing and whatever else, but it's like, but I don't have time for you. Like, it just has a very disdainful kind of thing, and it works beautifully. It works so great. It's like with Will Arnett. Yeah, he looks like he's barely able to keep it together, but he's also, like, when he's talking to Gonzo, he's looking him in the eye, and it's like, that's how you make something like this last. You know, it's a little spooky fun. You know, and, like, as Josh said, you know, Fred sort of said, like, peace, I'm out. You know, like, and that's, you know, that's okay, but it still makes it watchable 2 years from now, and 4 years from now, and 10 years from now, and whatever. Like, that part of it makes it doable.
And not for nothing, that's really hard to do. There's a local show up here that does, it's got, I think, between four and six puppeteers on a given show and then a human host. And I got to be the host a couple times. And so, you know, you come out and you introduce the different bits. And then just like on, you know, a Muppet movie or like a Sesame Street thing, they set it up where there's a camera filming it from a couple different angles, and they have a huge screen behind you that shows you what it would look like if it was a TV show where you can't see the puppeteers because they're on little rolling chairs like the ones doctors sit on. And they're holding the puppets up. They're wearing all black, and they're holding the things up. So the things are about the same height proportion as, like, the Muppets are when they're talking to humans. And so if you watch the screen, all you see is the puppet from, like, the waist up and then me. But if you're watching it live, you can see the puppeteers doing all the work in front of you live on stage. It's a really cool idea. And learning to, and we did like, you know, a half hour rehearsal before the first one I did. And like me training myself to look at the puppet's eyes as opposed to the puppeteer, because I'm looking to them for like visual cues, but then realizing, no, these are really great puppeteers. I'm getting everything I need from the puppet. And then, you know, stealing glances at the screen to see like what it looks like as I'm doing stuff. And then realizing if I have to take a step forward to try to even out our heights, or take a step back so I'm still in frame and the Muppet looks smaller. And like, it's just a ton of work to make all that stuff come together. And like, when it looks as seamless and effortless and fun as it does in a show like this, like these people worked hard to make this look that good.
Well, like you watch the Tiny Desk concert, the Sesame Street Tiny Desk concert. Well, watch it and try not to tear up. That's the first thing. But then also watch it and watch all the kids stay on the ground there, looking up at the Muppets. They're not looking around the thing. They're not looking. They're looking up at them. Yeah, like, and that's the magic of the thing. And I think the Michael Eisners of the world, they don't understand that concept. They don't understand why that matters. And so like when you're introducing like little kids to like, you know, spooky kind of things, whatever, the way you do it is that you keep these guys that are your level part of the world that you're seeing. Like if they're just sort of placeholders going from spot A to spot B, the kid's not going to get engaged in that. Like it's not, there's nothing for them to grab a hold of. And it's like they're people, or it's like some of the Abbott Costello ones, the Abbott Costello, you know, Frankenstein is great, but there's a lot of other ones like that that are just sort of like not so great. And so it's sort of like there has to be some level of engagement. And I think they seem to get that in this one. And so hats off to them for doing this fun little thing. I thought it was super, super enjoyable.
For sure.
Yeah. I had fun with it.
Oh. That's also the fucking goat. But
that was my favorite part every time. It was so funny every time.
It's so goddamn ridiculous.
I have nothing but respect for somebody who can take a simple gag and make it work over and over and over again. Like in Zombieland 2, the girl who always says just the dumb thing. And she could have been just insufferable, but everything she says is hilarious. And they go just long enough between them that you kind of forget that she's there. And then she gives you one of those Mrs. Peacock was a man kind of lines. That's good stuff. Yeah, so this guy, like, it's one if you just enjoy the Muppets in general, I think you'd like it. If you are an adult who likes to watch kid stuff like me, or you have kids, then this is a no-brainer. So yeah, it's it's another 7.5. Like it's not classic Muppets, but it's pretty damn close.
This definitely, if you are a Muppets fan, I think this scratches the itch well. And if you are familiar with like the Haunted Mansion experience at Disney, and you're a fan of that, which I'm a huge dork for that, then that's a whole other layer of like fun nostalgia porn. And the two of them coming together just blended really beautifully. I really thought it was very well done. I had a ton of fun watching this. So I'll go even higher. I'm going to go 8.5 out of 10. Witty tombstone.
God, I almost forgot, her name just fell out of my head. The lady driving the Nicole Brown. God, like her little bit. And like they didn't talk about perfect casting of like, because she always has that kind of like, oh, I just woke up and look at that over there. Oh, look at that. That's she always has that kind of quality to her, just sort of demeanor in general. And that was just so great. Like this, like instead of being like hip streetwise-y kind of style, it was more just sort of like it had that kind of sweet sort of complete. Just that thing that gets missing from these kinds of things I don't know. She was another little great little part that I really like. Yeah, I bring him here, but I never have to pick him up though. And oh, God, love her. So you know, it's just all the little moments. They made so many right decisions. Some of the jokes are so great. Like the sweep me up with feet. Like you don't have any feet. ooh, just all that silly, silly stuff. And just really, really enjoyable. And they seem to understand you got to keep it moving. And it's just sort of like they seem to get that idea of how to pace it out a bit. And that made it really, really, really cool too. You know, this just kept a nice rhythm going. And I think ultimately it has a good heart to it too. I mean, I think the whole thing of like, it's not a sour bowl kind of a thing. It's like, there's a sweet aspect to it where it would be easy to miss that and not give like a little bit of a reward, to kind of speak to the idea that like, it's fun to have like a little spooky stuff. It's great fun. It's very charming. So, you know, good on them across the board. So I was going to be 8, but I was going to say 8.5. I'm going to go up with Matt. I'll say 8.5. Like I really thought they did such a good job of balancing out all the different components they had to bring in to kind of make it swing and not make it longer, not make it more cameo-y in a way that doesn't really matter. And treating as they always should in every one of these projects, they seem to remember that you have to treat these characters with some level of respect. And that's like, I really like that. And so good job. So I'll say 8.5 out of 10, 8.5 out of 10, 8.5 out of 10, just corny jokes that are so great because they're kid jokes, you know, they're just the kid jokes. And you know, think about what you felt like when you were little, or like when you have little ones, when they're in that era of like the kind of the Jimmy Durante, Groucho Marx joke phase of like, you know, if you did it the right way. And it's sort of like, and that's the kind of humor that's just going to click. And they just think it's great because they get it. And it's like, it's clever. And it's like, ah, yes, I get this, that this is a joke. And I'm going to deliver a punchline now. And it's like, that's fantastic. And that's the kind of humor. And it's like, it reminds me a lot of that. So, yeah, 8.5 out of 10, 8.5 out of 10. The corny and the best jokes.
Ooh. All right, so let's finish up with The House, La Casa. I knew going into this thing that it wasn't a straightforward horror movie, that it seemed like it was going more for creepy than anything else. But I wanted to do it because of said creepiness and because stop motion is just amazing, and it's kind of a miracle if any of it exists.
Yeah.
But just, and this one has three different directors doing a half hour or 45 minute long thing, and each has a different look to it. And the first one, everything is made of felted wool, which Jesus Christ would have taken hundreds of years to do.
It was ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the you just get these different styles. And then we have the middle one is a mice thing that it's very like almost taxidermied looking. And then the last one is cats that almost look like they're people in mascot suits.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the scale makes you. A couple of shots, I almost wonder if it was. It's like, maybe it could have been.
Yeah, they look big. Yeah, just every time I watch something like this, it just like every single plank in that floor had to be put there by a person. How does anybody ever do this shit? It's amazing. So, like visually, this is stellar. Story wise, there isn't really. Stories, it's going more for a feel, I feel like, than a point. Just like things, weird things happen and then they stop, was kind of my impression for most of this. And Charlie, you were saying, like, interestingly, it seemed like the first couple were people getting like the full-on Tales from the Crypt screw over, but without the transgression to be punished for.
Yeah, because so I've been wrestling about that for like a week or more now, and I've been thinking about it almost every day, thinking about this. And it's just like the more I think about it, the more frustrated it makes me, because it's like the first two stories, especially, and the third one to a much lesser degree, but the first two especially, like you have the people in the kind of the very humble home, like, you know, trying to figure out how do you you know, provide better for your family and this and that and whatever. And it's like, here's an opportunity to do that. And then you just have to like live in the house and do whatever. And it's like, and so they're like, yeah, this will be pretty great for the kids and then whatever. And it's like, but the allure of it or whatever else is the thing that they're like punished for by this like maniacal rich, like, abuser that, like, you know, transforms them into furniture and curtains, and then the children barely get away, and it's just sort of like, and like the bad guy doesn't get any punishment, and it's sort of like, it's a really weird, it's just sort of like, ha, see, these fuckers tried to make their lives better, fuck them.
Yeah, like, but I mean, that to me came off as more of like an original Grimm's fairy tale, where it's just like, there's just, you know, don't go in, the Baba Yaga's in the woods, you know, like, and there's no, like, you don't have to be doing anything to transgress, aside from the fact that this thing will just decide it wants to fuck with you, or decide that you've offended it on whatever its bizarre terms are. Like, I think they were just meant to be hapless people that got wrapped up in a thing that they didn't fully understand, and that's just because that thing's like an evil entity.
Oh, well, no, absolutely. I mean, like, the thing with the Grudge, like, I always say with the Grudge, like, just, like, you picked the wrong house on the wrong goddamn day.
Yeah.
Like, and it sucks, and it, of course, but I just, and I don't mean this in a rude way, Matt, but I just, like,
yeah, no,
I think at a certain point, like, many people have told that story well. Like, you give me the other half of that. Give me, what is the monster's motivation? Like, what is the way to unfuck the situation? What's the way to Rumpelstiltskin in a way that you can kind of turn the tables? Like, how do you hunt the slasher? Like, at a certain point, like, tell something different. Because, and especially the second one, like, that one really, like, legitimately made me mad. Like, that one, the second one actually, like, it made me mad, where I was like, it's like, you know, in here in Austin, like, or in a lot of places, there's a lot of people who do shoddy jobs of, you know, developing or remodeling things and then flipping them and selling them or whatever else. But, like, there are a lot of investors from, like, another country or from another whatever. Whereas, like, this guy's, like, living in the place and, like, doing the remodeling and, like, investing all of his money and doing all this kinds of stuff and doing the work and doing all this kinds of stuff. And it's, like, there's some allegories to be had, some symbolism to have, but he didn't do a goddamn thing wrong. And it was just sort of, like, the story was just hell-bent on just sort of, like, driving him to madness. And it's, like, fine, but we've told that fucking story before. Like, it's just sort of like, it's like, oh, ha, because fuck him. And it's like, it just felt very sourbully to me. And it's just like, and it's weird for me to say that out loud, because, like, what's a ton of shit that's very sourbully? Like, there's no good ending, you know? But for whatever reason, I feel like the tone of the first two especially just,
it's felt interesting,
like, very deliberately unfair. Like, huh.
It's interesting, yeah, because if that mouse realtor was a dick, we wouldn't be thinking about it this way. But I kind of felt like the moral of each of these stories is don't have a house. And like, the first one is just like, if you get a big fancy house, then you're going to be caught up in the materialism of it. If you get a fixer-upper house, then you're fucked forever. And I've been there. I've absolutely been there. And then the third one is like, a house can be a trap to keep you from exploring the world. So it was like, it's very negative on houses. But I don't know, that middle one, maybe it's just because I've had the house where you find the mouse droppings behind the kitchen cabinet, you know? I just felt like this is just the hapless story of this poor guy's worst day. And there's no reason why he's been selected for this. And the, you know, the weird ass bugs and the people, the other rats who are in the same shapes as the two types of bug, which is fascinating. So it's just like this nightmare for him. And that was okay. Like, I didn't think it was like, fuck this guy. It was like, isn't this the way that the world shits on you sometimes, right? Like,
or if they it just do be like
that sometimes.
Well, yeah, no, you're totally right, Joshua. I mean, like, yeah, I think that's accurate. I just, if it had just been like, he's just like, ha ha, I'm going to cut this corner, I'm going to cut this corner, and ha ha, I'm going to make all this money. Like, he's like thinking of finer things. But it's also like, I mean, sleeping on a fucking cot and like doing all this stuff and really maxing everything to the nth degree to try to make this thing happen, like everybody, every small business owner in the country does. In the world, for that matter, like everybody is in that situation to some degree or other, because they're trying real hard to make whatever it is that they do, and it's like, so it's not any different, you know. And so it's sort of like, so when the first bug crawls from behind the thing and he kind of goes like, oh shit, mm-hmm. and kind of mushes him, he's like, he's almost got that thing of like where you just kind of go like, but I'm working really hard, so it's gonna work. I know it's gonna work. It's gonna, you know, it's going to jive. Parallel that with like the phone calls where you're like, maybe it's like an estranged, partner or whatever else. And that was another interesting decision, like to have that be in the third act of that and be like he's just like stalking his dentist.
Right.
Sort of like,
that was another thing though that clued me to think that this was just meant to be that like absurd kind of Fawlty Towers, just dude getting shit on because that's what life is like, but in a funny way. In a fun way.
Yeah, I don't know.
Where did you land on that?
Matt, where did you land on this one?
I really liked this movie. I mean, visually alone, it's just fantastic.
Oh my god.
Like,
yeah.
As far as the stories go, like, I don't know. I think I just kind of just took them at face value and just kind of was curious to see how things would play out. And it's like, oh, okay, like in the first one, I don't think there's no like even real like avarice in the decision to go to a better home for your family, right? Mm-hmm. That's perfectly logical. And it's just, they didn't know that they were going to get screwed over and turned into furniture. But then as that starts happening, you're just like, oh, cool. Like, this is very much like, the kids in Pinocchio turning into donkeys on Treasure Island. Or not Treasure Island, what's it called?
Is it Pleasure Island?
Is it Pleasure Island?
Yeah, Pleasure Island, because they named that boardwalk at Disneyland or Disney World for it. As they just spend time in this place, it kind of just takes over their lives because they just are constantly offered temptation and offered it for no cost. So someone's like, hey, wouldn't you like some better clothes? They're like, well, sure, I'm wearing shit covered rags because I'm a shit juggling dirt farmer.
Yeah.
But, And so, like, all their decisions are actually quite logical because, like, yeah, you would want to, if given the opportunity to improve your situation, you would. But, and I don't know if they're trying to make a lesson of, like, there's a tipping point where it goes from being, trying to save yourself from destitution to becoming greedy. I don't know that they necessarily sold that or if that was what they were going for. But I think if you're going to try to apply, like, a fable moral to it, I think that's probably the closest you could come. But again, I'm not sold on that being the point. And yeah. With the second one,
it's just look a gift horse in the mouth.
Kinda, and yeah, with the mouse realtor guy, it's like the closest thing he has to a sin is that he's just kind of lying to everyone about how things are going. And is probably using that to scam additional loans and time from the bank and all that. But it's at the same time, like you said, Charlie, that's just what you do to get by.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it's...
Because you got to wait for something to land. So, and again, I don't necessarily think that this is about him being punished for, stretching his prospects and lying to, investors and people like that about how great things are going or what a wonderful spot it is, blah, 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 blah. But I think that's the closest you could apply to it. But I was just more just kind of enraptured with the idea of like, what's the next thing that can go wrong? Cause
yeah,
there's plenty of, comedies that are just one disaster, like The Money Pit, right?
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That, that's fine.
It. I've lived it.
So it's
or it makes it like Pacific Heights. Like I think like Pacific Heights, the one with Matthew Modine and Michael Keaton I can't think of her name off the top of my head, but it's the one where it's sort of like, they buy the thing and they're going to be renovating it. They're going to like rent out the one room and they're going to which helps pay for them as they're renovating it, whatever. And it's like, Michael Keaton just slowly but surely just like increases the fucking width until it becomes very dangerous. And it's sort of like, but in the second to third act, you can really feel Matthew Modine's character like just coming unglued because you're like, this is not fair. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, I'm not trying to take over the world. I'm just trying to make sure I can keep everything in the black and breathe every once in a while. And no part of this is like, God damn it. And it's like, and there's something very relatable to that thing. But of course in that movie, that's like, it's ramping up to this kind of thriller component or whatever. And like, I kind of felt that in this one, in that middle one where I was like, what the fuck, universe? Like, Jesus, like, just this poor fucking guy. Like, just, I don't know. I just felt really bad for him. Like,
maybe that was just like a modern retelling of Job.
Good to go. But I just really liked the two mice who were just like, we are very interested in the house.
Yeah. So fucking
God, it was so weird. It was like, and the way that their body, it was so strange. Well, no, not strange. It's really cool to talk about body language with like a puppet, because mm-hmm. it's a sort of like, I mean, they, the one, the kind of the thick, the thicker, shorter one, the kind of beetly looking, the beetle one, like the way that it moves and like kind of moves its shoulders and stuff. It's very subtle, but you're like, it's like, God, yeah. It's mm-hmm. just, but yeah, no, watching that whole thing come unglued, I just was like, I don't know. It was just an interesting kind of exercise and like what trips you up, you know, from a morality standpoint. And I just, you know, as someone who just loves Tales from the Crypt and the original ones and the old comic books and every other kind of thing, it was nothing more fun than watching some mean person get their comeuppance. And like in the first two stories, I'm like, these people's ovens shouldn't come. Like, yeah. God, you know, just sort of, and then, but then we get to the third one, and I think that one is a lot more subtle. I think out of the three of them, that one is the one where, like, Avring being conditioned now to be like, well, somebody's going to, like, through no fault of their own, they're just going to get punished. But then with that one, it was more just sort of like a, like, you know, Josh, you say, like, you know, it keeps you from seeing the world or whatever. You know, she was just bound and determined to try to make a thing work and be this dream. When like the forest for the trees is that like, the, you know, the circumstances are just not going to allow that, and so you have to embrace that change to it. And she didn't do anything. She's not doing anything wrong by doing that. I mean, everybody does that in some capacity, personal and professional, otherwise, in some way or other, at different points in their life. So like, you can totally relate to it. And it's like, and, you know, when the whole thing comes up, it's like I can't. It's like, you know, there's rent, and like, it gives her the fish. And yeah. Like, you know, the crystals and stuff, and it's sort of like, well, but I know I need to rent the money to be able to pay for whatever. And they're like, well, I can't pay you in money per se, but like we can pay this other thing. It's like, no, that doesn't work because I've got this dream and I've got this plan and da 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 da. And that one was the one that like just felt more humanistic, at least, or at least more caring in its tone.
And in the meantime, throughout this whole thing, the floodwaters rising.
Yeah.
And I love that that is just left to be an evocative, cool thing.
Yeah, it is simply the state of this universe.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about what is happening here, but it's a great metaphor for just like, you know, when people say, I'm trying to keep my head above water. That's exactly what she's trying to do.
Well, and that was the beautiful lesson, I think, in that one, was that when, you know, I love the kind of shaman-y guy that shows up. Like, he just is like, yeah. You know, this is ridiculous. Like, all this, you know, it's very much like back home, Josh. Like, very much that Sedona kind of auras and crystals and all that bullshit. But it was also a matter of like, hey, you lay off our cultural ambassador. Yeah, which, by the way, I love the new Salesforce ads, the Team Earth one. I think it's so great. Anyway, but like, what was neat about that was that there was ultimately not like a situation where, you know, where she gets the growth is like her, and I say humanity, she's a cat, but like she's like her humanity. Gets kind of like shown to her, and then she kind of goes like, I'll take a breath a minute. I'll unbutton one button and I'll just kind of sit on this chair and kind of just laugh a minute and whatever. And it's like, oh yeah, humanity. I remember. And that's a kind of a beautiful little idea, you know, this idea of like letting a little bit of humanity in. And so it's like, but I mean, after being primed from the first two, I'm like, what awful fucking thing is going to happen to her? And this is sort of like, you know, they're going to seal her inside of it. She's going to drown because it's going to blah, 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 blah. Because she wouldn't accept fish and crystals as rent. And it's like, but it didn't go that way. They went a different way. I was like, oh, well, fascinating. It's like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. It was a weird little animal, this movie. It was a very strange thing. But yeah, I can't rationally explain why the second one made me so mad. It just did.
I wonder, because it's like I saw myself in that guy, and instead of feeling like he was being tortured unfairly, I just related hard to it, and I thought it was really funny. Like, yeah, I've been there. Anyway, but I could see that going the other direction too. Yeah, and so I agree. This has got this great look to it. Every single detail is just breathtaking. This some of the stop motion is so smooth that it looks like it's live action.
Yeah.
Where there's just so much care given to every single part of it. Even the creepy tiny faces on the wool people somehow work.
That one, I have to say, I'm glad you said that, Joshua, because that was the one thing that did, like, out of the three of them, there was a few moments in that first one where I kind of forgot myself a little bit, and like looking at these little felt people, and I was sort of like, I kind of creeped out a couple of moments in that one, where like the guy's like losing his crap, and he's just like, I'm just an actor, I don't want to do it anymore, and I was like, yeah, and then like the banging and the hammering in that one room, and they kind of turn, and then they're just sort of like, just like almost like kind of manic sort of look about them, and it's just like, oh, it's just moments like that. I was like, no, that's incorrect, and that's a tough thing to do, I would say, to allow the viewer moments to kind of forget that you're watching little bits of, you know, material kind of moving around. Like I don't think it's easy to do necessarily. And as you say, like how stop motion ever gets accomplished is, you know, kind of a miracle in and of itself. So like this artistry out the wazoo, I just, narratively speaking, I wanted it to be more just straight up gleefully dark, like Tales of the Crypt, or more kind of supernaturally and otherworldly, almost Guillermo del Toro-y in a way, like in a kind of a fantastical sort of a way, or like have any of these characters be more fully fleshed out to such a degree at which like they kind of go through like a whole arc where they're like something, but it's like, it's not any one of those things necessarily. So, you know, but maybe I'm being too nitpicky. I don't know, for whatever reason, it's that second one just really kind of like got on my nerves. And then on the first one, those poor fucking people, they're just like, yeah, turn on a damn chair. It's just so sad. That shot, oh my God, that shot of her at the sewing machine, like, if that didn't give you a little bit of the willies, like, you know, that second night where she's in front of the sewing machine, just like, thump, thump, thump. It's just like, yeah. Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, so for me, like, I would give it an 8 just for the look of it. And if the story had been decent too, I would have given it more. But I would say, yeah, 8 out of 10 seems fair.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I would also say 8 out of 10. It's fucking gorgeous, and you should watch it just to like see the achievement of what was put together here in this format. Yeah, I mean, I think we've discussed some different angles on how you could like interpret the stories. So I think, you know, anyone watching this, you might come to your own totally different conclusion, or you might find it interesting to see where you line up. But I think, you know, regardless of if you liked a particular segment or not, I think it's easily thought provoking because they do kind of leave things a little unclear, and they kind of don't feel the need to over explain much. Mm-hmm. So you can sort of draw your own conclusions, and it's kind of fun. Sometimes that's annoying in a movie or a short, but in this one, it's just kind of like, okay, what the fuck is going on here? And you kind of spend some time puzzling it out, but not in a way where you feel like they just didn't write it. It just seems like they chose to reveal just as much as they thought they needed to without over explaining, you know? So yeah, I think it's totally worth watching. 8 out of 10.
I would say, yeah, I'll go a little bit lower. I would say just because narratively speaking, that was the part that, you know, really kind of lacked, but the artistry sure as hell didn't. I mean, the artistry is so great. Like I have a particular affection for like miniature sort of things and the way that the art of that works. The shot where he comes back and then like all the bug beetle rat suit things are all like, hey, welcome home from the hospital or whatever. Like that is a tiny little space that they're shooting this thing. I mean, you know, like probably no bigger than the side, like the middle part of a dining table, or whatever else. And to get all these articulated things in there and move all this stuff and do all this stuff, like that is a level of madness and creativity that is just to be applauded. So I would go, I mean, if it was not in that realm, I probably would have been lower because I just narratively was kind of aggravated a little bit through the whole thing. But the artistry of it is so fucking great. And then, like, I like the hopefulness of the third one to at least bring it around a little bit. So I will say 7. I'll say 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. I couldn't imagine the feeling of a realtor walking into the bathroom of a house that you're showing, and then two of the people that are looking at the home are now taking a bath.
Because they're my God. Very interested in the home.
But they're very, very interested in the house.
Whose house?
God.
That's
out of 10.
Fantastical. Well, let's take a little break and we'll be right back with the movies we're going to watch in the week to come.
Yeah.
So next week coming up, we have some movies that are fairly new and that we just kind of wanted to watch. So we're going to watch them. We're going to watch All the Moons on Shudder. We're going to watch Deep House on Hulu. And not a new genre of electronic music, but a movie, I believe, about an underwater haunted house, which is the best idea ever. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the new one that's doing the Halloween thing where they're like, no, only the first movie exists. Matthew McConaughey, never heard of him. Renee Zellweger, never heard of her. So Bill Moseley, who the fuck is that? So yeah, All the Moons, Deep House, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I've already forgotten what your short is called, Matt.
A Summoning Game.
A Summoning Game. Yes, because that's why we were talking about Sting, because 10 Summoner's Tales. I'll put that in the stinger, y'all. also, this week I did some extracurricular movie watching because we wanted to catch up on some of the Oscar-nominated stuff. Power of the Dog. Very strange little subsumed kind of Western that takes a fairly predictable story and does some good stuff with it. It's really good acting, but left me feeling a little hollow. Coda is absolutely wonderful.
Yes.
It has a little whiff of the kind of too quirky indie thing from the early aughts, but doesn't go too far into that and is mostly just uplifting and wonderful and a thing you don't see very often. And then we watched the Eyes of Tammy Faye, which is amazing and sent us down repeated Wikipedia rabbit holes as I go, yes, all of this happened. Like, yes, this is this lady and she was like this. We ended up watching some footage of the real Tammy Faye.
That shit's wild.
Comparing it to Jessica Chastain's version, and it is fucking eerie. She is channeling. So this was really, really good and kind of gave me some context for these things that I remembered as a kid, the scandals and whatnot with these people. But like at first I said, I'm afraid that this is going to humanize her and I don't want them to because she's a monster.
Right.
But I mean, turns out she's kind of not. Like she was very sincere and very open and accepting for a Christian in that era and even in this one. But, you know, also she was either willfully or by omission, just blind to the fact that her husband was ripping people off. So anyway, Eyes of Tammy Faye, fantastic. Power of the Dog, interesting, pretty, not sure. Coda, uplifting, lovely, wonderful. I also watched Knock Knock, and that was not for the Oscars. That was just because I apparently wanted to think about a movie and twist myself in knots for a week. But send me your thoughts on Knock Knock with Keanu Reeves and Ana de Armas. And with that, I will say finally that I've enjoyed this entire time, and I'll say goodnight.
I've been dividing my time watching things extracurricular-wise between going through a bunch of Marvel stuff on Disney+. There's a lot of really cool stuff on there. I think I mentioned earlier in the episode that Marvel Rising cartoon is fantastic, especially if you're a fan of Kamala Khan and Squirrel Girl. I'm a big fan of both. The voice actors they got for that show are phenomenal. Squirrel Girl especially is fucking hilarious. So totally worth checking out if you like those characters at all. They really do a great job of portraying them in cartoon form. I've been doing a lot of that. And then in between Marvel stuff, I've been watching just every nature documentary I can get my hands on the National Geographic hunk of Disney+. The most recent one I watched is a 3-part series on the Great Barrier Reef because weird fishes are cool.
Yes.
So check that one out if you're into that sort of thing. And if you like documentaries, like sometimes, you know, it comes and goes when you watch the nature stuff, you don't get around to it again for a while. And I hadn't watched them for a long time, but now that I just have access to a bajillion of them, I've been kind of diving into that rabbit hole. That doesn't make sense as a metaphor. But it's just been really fun. It's just kind of like scrolling through and being like, ooh, that looks neat. And they've got all the, the Attenborough stuff on there too, which is great. Those are always worth watching yet again. So yeah, you know, treat yourself to a cool nature doc. Check out some weird looking animals. There's that whole one on just the way different birds dance to do their mating rituals. That one's cool.
Yeah, that one's really fun.
That one's great.
That one is really like, that one is very charming. It's like, it's, that one's, it's a lot super of fun. Fun.
Yeah, and there's also a really, really cool one that's about, you know, urban sprawl and like these wild animals learning to live in urban environments. And so it's just like, okay, in this, you know, city and wherever, like, at night, jaguars come in and roam the city streets to get cheap meals of, you know, garbage and or pets. And, you know, and like they have all these night cameras set up in just different posts. And you see just these animals that you're like, oh, that's just fucking crazy. Like a huge troop full of monkeys running across the road, or like, yeah, tigers and shit, you know. And it's, but it's just really interesting. They're like, how these are how animals are being forced to adapt at a rate that's, you know, not really comfortable for this, you know, the pace of evolution to try to find ways to survive. And it's just, it's really fascinating. It's just something I hadn't seen done as a nature doc before. So that's another really cool one to check out. So anyway, I'll shut up now and say, as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time and I'm sorry.
Pardon me. No, I think that's awesome. Yeah. It's actually, it's amazing how much of that stuff is actually on Disney Plus, because I think either AMC or whoever owns the, whoever has the Discovery Library, like, you know, now they show like, I married my sister's lemur or whatever the fuck. But like,
yeah, there's still a bunch of ancient aliens shit. And
yeah, they show a bunch of garbage now, but like they have an amazing archive of some pretty remarkable work. I mean, this is, that's some pretty cool stuff. And like, you, when you get into that kind of really, really tough first, if you ever like the planet, you know, Planet Earth, and then the Planet Earth 2, and then Ocean.
Oh, so good.
That series. What I would do before you watch those, if you've never watched them, for God's sakes, get on it. But like, if you've not ever watched those, watch the making of one first that PBS put together. It's like an hour. Watch that first, and then you will, you wouldn't dare blink out of disrespect for the people that have done this crap for a year and a half to try to put this thing together. Like, they have just a sheer technical, you know, chutzpah to be able to kind of pull off some of this stuff. Is something.
Well, it was like whole 3 years to be able to get just as little footage as they got of snow leopards.
Yeah, it's just absolutely incredible. Yeah, and like the environment and such, every, I don't know, it was just wild. So yeah, watch that making up thing. You can really get a sense of it, of what they're really doing. Also, if you're, when you're doing that, there's another, there's a documentary called Four Photographs, or Four Frames. I'll find it and I'll put it somewhere. But about a journalist in Afghanistan, Iran, and just sort of like navigating what it means to be a journalist in countries like that. And it's a really beautiful thing. Four Frames, that's what it is. but more to our point, the I wanted to make sure people were aware that in a couple of, you know, fuck a duck, I think it's actually this weekend. Jeez, I mean, yeah, I guess it is. The 20th, which is, I think, Sunday, is on Epix, E-P-I-X, Epix. They are debuting From, which is the series based on Jerusalem's Lot by this young up-and-coming guy named Stephen King, who you may have heard of. And a lot of people got to get a chance to see the first couple of episodes and have been like, it's like, hot damn. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing that. Also realized that Epix was the one that picked up that Chapelwaite, that haunted town thing with like Adrian Brody and like a bunch of spooky types, and Emily Hampshire from Schitt's Creek. But it's like, and that one just a humdinger and a half. So it's like, God, look, Epix, I don't have any more bandwidth for any one more goddamn streaming thing, but I really want to see that. So I'm glad that that's coming up here. Like I said, Chapelwaite's on there. That's pretty darn neat. I know I've already mentioned Yellow Jackets, which I really dug. I thought it was awesome. That was really, really well done as well. So there's a lot of great stuff like that that's around. You can really find some nifty things. There's a New Zealand one called One Lane Road, if you're really into like a kind of really cool noirish type of stuff. So that one's around too. So god dang, there's a lot of really cool stuff. But yeah, From was the one that I wanted to mention so I didn't forget, because that'll be out this coming week. And then Chapelwaite is it's very spooky.
Oh yeah, if you haven't yet, check out the trailer for Jordan Peele's new one called Nope.
Yeah.
Because that's just fun to speculate on.
I love, so that's, here's what I love about that whole thing. Just real, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Matt. Like, here's what I love about that. So like, of course we're gonna see it. I mean, it's Jordan Peele's new movie. Like, I really like him as a person. I like what he's trying to do. I am waiting for him to make a complete movie. But it's like, I really admire what he's doing, the way he's going after, and the stories and the and how he's doing stuff. Like, yeah, I'm right. I'm super in his camp and his you know, everything. Like, it's really great to see. But what I love is the trailer's a minute and something long. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yep. I love it.
No idea. And I don't give a shit. Like, that could be the only trailer, as far as I'm concerned.
That's what trailers should be.
Yeah, it's like,
be intriguing, like, and not tell you the whole story.
Like, what is even happening with this? And then you're just like, no idea. And it's like, I don't care. I'm sold. We're good. I'm in. Like, let's do it. So, you know, it was neat to see that. I also really loved that they were supposed to premiere it during the Super Bowl, and then he just posted it like 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, here you go. It's like, damn, dude. Like, good. Like, all right. Just let them know what your name is. Like, that's pretty cool. So, a lot of cool stuff to look forward to, I think, for sure. And I'm glad for that. Glad for the opportunity. Shudder, and I'm not prepared at this point, so maybe like next week. But I know Shudder's got some stuff coming up around the corner. Livid is finally going to be available in this country. I saw that at Fantastic Fest a decade ago. And has never been available in this country. So I'm pretty thrilled that they finally got that in there. Of course, along with it, they're re-getting up a lot of some of the French Extreme, some of the stuff that's actually decent, and some of the stuff that's not so decent. But Livid is finally going to be available in this country, like, after a goddamn decade. So I'm kind of thrilled about the fact that that actually is going to exist. So once you know when that time is going to be, let people know about that. Because, like, it has been long enough now that I know the parts. I can barely remember, you know, some of it, because it's been so goddamn long ago. So anyway, we'll keep everybody updated. But in the meantime, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and enjoy the things that you enjoy. They enjoy that you enjoy them, and makes your life better to enjoy stuff. So go enjoy some things. And each other. I don't know. That's weird. I always say take care of yourselves and take care of each other, but then enjoy yourselves, enjoy each other, just sounds kind of gross. So behave yourselves. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
I got a short called A Summoning Game.
Ooh.
10 Summoner's Tales?
Yes.
I have my short is actually just an album by Sting.
And he's going to play the fuck out of the lute.
Could be scary.
It's the only way to play a lute. It's much harder to play inside a lute.
What's that costume supposed to be? Well, I'm a lute. You look a little small for a lute. You call me a liar?
Call me a liar?
So that always, so okay, the loot will always, so all right, just super fast, the thing that instrument will always make me think of, you know, back when Sting and that other dude put out that album of like 16th century music. Pretty cool album. It's very pretty. It's a little mellow, but it's neat to hear music played on string instruments that are not normally played. This is really kind of cool. But around when that came out, well, that was when Studio 60 on Sunset Trip was on, which is the Aaron Sorkin kind of takeoff on SNL, but it's like based in LA. But anyway, the Christine Lottie plays this journalist who's trying to get the kind of inside story on the main stars in the show, and she's like visiting the set. And that week, Sting and that guy, or the guy that plays with him on that album, were like the musical guests on like Studio 60, you know, the SNL thing. And so they're out, they're doing a rehearsal, and one of the characters, played by Sarah in all the American Horror Stories, name I cannot remember. That actress is standing there. Sarah Paulson. There we go. Paulson. And she's sitting there, you know, listening to him play. And Christine Lottie walks up, and Sarah Paulson says, "What a beautiful instrument." And Christine Lottie says, "Sting or the lute?" And that's what I always think of now, forever and ever. When I ever hear the lute, when I hear it played, when I hear it mentioned, I always think of that: the sting or the lute. fucking brain is useless. It's like I can't remember things 5 minutes after I've told them, but I'll remember that line from a TV show that I loved from 15 years ago.
Choose your path, Sting or the lute. It was a weird.
Yeah, you died by dysentery. Yeah, shit.
Once I got back-to-back ads on Facebook for like online courses for stuff, and one was learn beekeeping and one was learn to play the harmonica. I was like, well, like those are two very stark choices to be made.
Absolutely.
Anyway, all right.
Girlfriend comes home wearing all white, covered in bee stings and honey. That's right. She's a keeper.